The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Bob Dio is on the other side of the glass, the engineer and producer extraordinaire of the Buckmaster Show. How you doing on this Thursday? It's the 5th of September, 2019. You're listening to 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, and of course, kvoi.com. Podcasts available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. Live line number 790-2040 for any comments or questions for Tucson Councilman Steve Kasacek, who is with us for his monthly visit. We usually try to put him on the first week of every month. Councilman, how are you today?
Doing wonderfully. How are you doing, Bill?
Doing very well. I'm glad to see the relief efforts are starting now in the Bahamas. So hard hit. Such a beautiful area of the world. Was down there a couple of years ago. The airport at Grand Bahama, Steve, was pretty much wiped out. Not pretty much. Completely destroyed under 3 feet of water. Well, the water's receded and you can imagine what's left. So it's a real bad scene down there.
I can do a little more than imagine because I took a trip to Sri Lanka after the tsunami hit there and did take part in relief efforts. And it was nothing short of a war zone. And they're right now in the low 20s of people who have died. That number is going to certainly increase, but so you think about, you know, what we think about are rebuilding homes and roads and the infrastructure, but in terms of rebuilding people's lives, the grief, the grief that people go through over having lost loved ones, friends, relatives, it's going to be just an immense rebuilding, not just structurally, but spiritually for that country. So, you know, this, it's great to see, you know, the all the people stepping up and, you know, helping out from the standpoint of the physical needs, but the spiritual needs of those people in terms of just rebuilding their psyches is going to be just.
That will take. That's going to take a long time.
Oh,
take
God.
Years.
Yep.
As a member of the St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church.
Speaking of spiritual needs.
Yeah,
right?
Speaking of spiritual needs, I'm a member who maybe I guess I could be one of those that goes Christmas and Easter, but I am part of certainly the St. Philip's family, which is, of course, a wonderful part of our community, historic structure. Folks at St. Philip's were very much upset about this proposal that developers wanted to build a hotel, four-story hotel, very close to the church. Did this come up yesterday at the council meeting, this annexation?
Oh, yeah. I actually attended a public meeting at St. Philip's last, I think it was Thursday night, and spoke with many of the members, and not just members, but also surrounding residents. We've ultimately voted to reject the annexation last night, and I made that motion, and I stand by that motion. I think the process was so wrong. What we had was an obviously gerrymandered annexation district that was made up to allow two developers to be the only ones who voted on whether or not they came into the city. That annexation district subsumed St. Philip's, and St. Philip's did not have a vote in whether or not to come in because it's a nonprofit, it's a church. And so that's governed by state law. So what we were confronted with was a couple of developers who wanted to put up not just a four-story hotel just north of the church, but also a significant retail and residential component, both east and west of Campbell Avenue, behind the Jostler Village and, again, behind St. Philip's. Setting aside the fact that there are drainage issues and floodplain issues, Campbell and River is already a D-rated, as in dog-rated, intersection in terms of traffic. I run through there frequently early in the morning, and it's backed up for a half a mile all the time that I'm going through there. None of the surrounding neighbors had a vote on the annexation. None of the church members had a vote on it, but all of them will be affected by it. I know that the condition of the annex. So what we were voting on last night was whether or not to annex this sort of rectangular shape piece of ground. And there would then, if we had voted to annex it, there would then be a rezoning conversation that would take place. And the developers had made it clear that the only way that they would consummate the annexation is if we gave them what they asked for in the rezoning. And that's what you just described. I didn't take a rubber stamp to the council meeting last night and was not prepared to rubber stamp what they were asking for. The membership of the church plus literally hundreds of the surrounding neighbors felt this was a done deal. And in fact, if we were ultimately going to bring the annexed area into the city, we would have had to agree to what they were asking for. And that's just not a good public process, and was not going to take part in that. We voted 6-1 to reject it. I will say this, though, and I did say this to the group last night, to the people who came to the council meeting, the Foothills residents need to incorporate. If they don't want to be part of the city, they need to incorporate. The fact that they're just kind of hanging out there in unincorporated Pima County is literally leaving tens of millions of dollars on the table. And those dollars are generated here, but they're going up to Maricopa County. Mm-hmm. And that's a function of the formula that's used for distributing state shared revenues.
Right.
Maricopa County is about 90% incorporated. We're in the 60s. That's a lot of money, and that will go to fix a lot of roads. It will go to fix, hire a lot of public safety officers, police and fire. And so what I said to the group was last night was, if you don't want to come into the city, great, wonderful, but you really need to look at incorporating, because that's to the financial gain of the entire region, not just the residents who were there last night.
Good point. I think that's a conversation that really needs to take part among my neighbors and residents, because I do live in the foothills in the unincorporated area. That conversation does need to begin. I agree with you.
Well, I don't think that. And here's another thing: is that I for the reality, the political reality is if the foothills is going to be annexed into the city, they would probably, because it's a more conservative area, they would probably want their own council member, and they would also probably want ward-only elections. I get that. Those political realities are probably not going to happen anytime soon, and so the incorporation conversation needs to happen. Then you get to vote for your own governing body. You get to set your own development rules and zoning rules. But it's really about the finances.
Before we talk, and maybe we'll save that for our second segment about the e-scooters, because I've got a lot of comments, and I know you do as well. Quickly, though, this is something that you've been following. The mosque, the Islamic Center of Tucson, their mosque stands in the shadows of an apartment complex known as Sol y Luna. And apparently some of the students have been targeting some of the members of the mosque by throwing bottles. What does the apartment ownership say about controlling some of their residents?
Yeah, this is like mowing the lawn. We go through this with a new crop of students every semester. 3 years ago when this began, there are two student housing towers. One is called Sol, as in sun, and one is called Luna, as in moon. So Sol y Luna are owned by GMH Group. It's an ownership group out of the East Coast. Short answer to your question is that when we went through this 3 years ago, they put into their lease agreements that if objects wind up coming off of your balcony, mm-hmm. if your name is on the lease for that suite, you're subject to eviction. Mm-hmm. We don't have to identify faces, but you're responsible for what your buddies do when they're visiting your room. And in fact, we had two incidents in the last week or so where beer was dumped on people down below and beer cans and bottles were thrown. They're near misses again, and GMH, the owners of the place, recognize that One of these days, it's not going to be a near miss, and someone's going to get hit in the head with a beer bottle or a whiskey bottle from six floors up, and it'll kill them.
Yep.
And so they have just yesterday agreed to exercise the eviction clause in their lease. I don't know how many students are going to be subject to it, but certainly the ones we... The other thing they agreed to 3 years ago was to put up cameras. And so the cameras were able to identify the suites these things came from a couple of weeks ago. They've been working with TPD. They've been working with their attorneys, and they are serving eviction notices on those students. The ultimate fix is to put up some sheet metal barriers so that the students can still enjoy the ambiance of being outdoors on an outdoor balcony. But if they get loaded, and they will, they don't have the opportunity to throw something down on the people below.
That's a good idea. All right, we're going to take our break right here. Before we do, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico is a great getaway, Councilman. Bob Dio, my fine engineer producer, just put up the current temperature at midday over in Silver City. The elevation is 5,500 feet. Do you want to take a quick guess, Steve Kasachek, of the noontime temperature over in Silver at this time?
It's certainly not 105.
No, maybe, it is not.
Maybe 80.
It's 82 degrees.
God. Yeah,
that is nice. So you're going to have a nice warm day, and of course that will translate into a cool evening. A 3-hour drive to Silver City, not bad at all. Go to southwestnewmexico.org for all the details of the great places to stay and so many recreation ideas in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. The e-scooters are coming to Tucson next week. Councilman Kasachek's reaction after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition with you. And a program note, the Friday Roundtable tomorrow, our focus interview will be with Congressman Raul Grijalva. He will be in studio along with Tim Steller, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. But right now it's Steve Kasachek, longtime Tucson City Councilman, with us on the live line for his monthly visit to our program. And of course, the electronic scooter debut is coming up in a week. And I saw that article on the front page of the business section of the New York Times yesterday, Councilman. San Diego's e-scooter tryout got off to a very bumpy start. It was supposed to be the next big thing in transportation, but now thousands of these e-scooters have led to injuries, deaths, lawsuits, and vandals. I'm worried about it, quite frankly.
I think it's a stupid idea, and the council approved it as a pilot project. 6 months, we're supposed to watch these things for 6 months. I am 100% opposed to it. I totally understand the desire to provide another transportation means, but we got to be smart about it. And so we're going to have 1,500 of these things, very likely along the streetcar route, because the vendors, there are two of them, two vendors, Bird and Razor, are going to deploy them where there's the most density, and they're going to put them around student housings, around the university, around downtown, where we have a confluence of pedestrians and bicycles and automobiles and buses and the streetcar and, oh, by the way, bars. And what could possibly go wrong?
This seems like a nightmare. The quote from San Diego City Council member Barbara Bray: "My constituents hate them pretty universally." The picture in the New York Times, 70 of these scooters lining just a very small part of one block in San Diego. I mean, what is our opt-out point on this?
Well, so here's, and you just kind of touched on another one of the flaws in this, is that we have the Tugo, the bike share. They have docking stations, and so when you get done with your ride, you put it back in a docking station, lock it, and walk it away. The scooters are dockless, and so you end your ride and you get off and you walk away. Now, it's all on our system, and so you're supposed to leave it in what's called the furniture area of the sidewalk over by the street, not up by the door, and you're supposed to leave 4 feet of walking space for people and pedestrians. The fact is that jurisdictions, not just San Diego, but jurisdictions all over the world are seeing these things, and the riders are riding in traffic. They're doing the face plants. So someone's going to hit our streetcar tracks and go flying. There will be injuries. But for the successful ones who end their trip in front of Caruso's or one of the Fourth Avenue restaurants, what we will inevitably see are these things just lining the sidewalks and cluttering up sidewalks. If you have a vision impairment, good luck making your way down the sidewalk, or if you're at a bus stop and you're visually impaired, there might be one completely legally parked right next to you that you can't see and you can trip over. So I don't see anything good coming from this. So your question was, what's the opt-out?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to watch and see how these things fare. As soon as we start to see injuries and the calls about the clutter pile up, I'm going to bring it back to the council and say enough is enough. What I said at the council meeting when we adopted this was that if any of you would like to see this pilot project run in your ward, knock yourselves out. But the reality is these are all going to be in Ward 6. They're all going to be in the downtown core, and I'm the one who's going to be getting the calls on them. And my reaction is simply going to be call one of the people who voted for these things, because I don't support them. And I'll be bringing it back to the council when we start to see the outcome that other jurisdictions have seen. And 6 months from now, if it's all smooth sailing and all the riders are parking them appropriately and nobody's been hurt, then I'll come on your show and say, gosh, I was wrong. But I don't think I'm going to have to do that.
I'm just curious if there's any city that has these e-scooters where they have had a great experience. It just seems like city after city says that the scooter injuries increase, and that's a big problem. And so if you brought it back to the council and said this isn't working, the council votes and you get a positive vote, is there a period, is it over then right away, or what's the deal?
Well, we would probably give the company
30 days.
Some time to ramp down. Yeah, I don't know what that time would be. I'm not going to be shy about coming back to the council and saying, "Same working, folks. Put them out on the east side of Tucson, you know, in the Saguaro National Monument east, where you don't have a bunch of traffic around." They're not going to do that. I mean, the scooter companies, and I get it. It's a business model. They make their money based on the frequency of ridership. You mentioned these things are coming on September the 12th. It will be interesting to see how they fare during our monsoons too. I mean, mm-hmm. They're going to be parked out there on the street. I don't know what they weigh. They can't weigh a whole heck of a lot, and so our monsoon winds are going to be throwing these things into the street. You know, I mean, just accidents waiting to happen. So, we'll have to give the company some sort of a ramp down period, but I fully expect this not to make. If I were given an over and under on the 6 months, I think it's going to be under for sure.
All right, let's see. Is this call related to that, Bob? It is. The caller, Dave, would like to join the conversation. Hello, Dave.
Hi. I was wondering, with as far as the U of A is concerned, what is the deal on personally owned scooters? Is it both non-motorized and motorized, or how does it go? And what part of the U of A? I mean, any campus, like out where the baseball field by city property? What's covered?
No, this is my understanding. The U of A has outlawed them within the campus proper. What they have outlawed are the electric scooters. If you're pushing yourself along on like the ones that kids used to ride and still do, you know, the self-propelled scooters, I don't believe those are outlawed at all. It's just the e-scooters. You ask about High Corbett, that they're illegal out there. That's city property. It's not university property. So it's just within the campus footprint.
All right. I've only got about a couple of minutes, because we are starting now to take what we call a hard break with a one-minute CBS update now at 31 minutes past the hour. But that gives us a couple of minutes to get an update on something we have followed for months now with you, Councilman, and that is the migrant housing situation. Could you give us a quick update?
Sure. Monastery is now shut down. All of the families are being housed out at the Elitis Welcome Center, out of the county facility. They have finished the vast majority of the upgrades, the improvements to the county facility. They have removed the cameras. They've removed doors and locks and things. The cameras, I mean, the surveillance cameras. So it's not a detention facility any longer. The families are being dropped off there. The county and the Catholic Community Services are sharing in the feeding, the preparation of the meals. The volunteers are stepping up and doing the same thing they were doing at the monastery. The numbers of folks are slightly down, but that's only a function of the weather. I saw just, I believe, on the news last night that there was a fairly large group of people who were picked up at the border. So as the weather starts to get more mild, we're going to see those numbers increase. It's all systems go, and the people who were concerned about the families being traumatized by being placed in, quotes, a detention facility, that has not at all panned out. It's a very welcoming environment. So donations are still, I'm still taking donations at the Ward 6 office, and we're still tramming them out there to the county facility. So the problem is not going to go away until the situation in Central America resolves in terms of living conditions and threats to people's lives. And this community continues to step up and operate in a humanitarian way.
The Benedictine Monastery, the former Benedictine Monastery, is that transition process now going on with developer Mr. Rolney?
Well, we will have on our September 17th agenda a public hearing to talk about the rezoning and either thumbs up or thumbs down on it, assuming that it's approved and everything that I've seen indicates that it should be. He's worked very closely with the surrounding community to put together a good product. Once that vote is in, assuming it's a yes, he should be in the ground moving utilities and moving dirt before Halloween, I would guess.
Is he happy the way things turned out?
Yeah, I believe, you know, we started with this 86-foot-tall, what I thought was way out of scale structure. He's at 55 feet, stepping down to 35 feet. He's got a commercial component. He's agreed to preserve the monastery with a public use. I think that he recognizes now that the greater good is served by this very public process. And so I think the answer is yes. I think he's pleased with how it's turning out. And also, he should rightfully be proud of the humanitarian work that he allowed to take place in there while we were working through the zoning.
Councilman Kasacek, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
Steve Kasacek with us on the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition, CBS News update on the hurricane and other news coming up here on the Buckmaster Show as we're going to be taking a hard break at 31 minutes past the hour. Then our environmental contributor, Mitch Tobin, on the line with us checking out. Boy, it's been a very sparse monsoon. We'll have an update. Mitch is next.
CBS News update. Hurricane Dorian is heading toward North Carolina now, promising the full complement of wind, rain, and storm surge. Hurricane Center Director Ken Graham.
10 to 15, maybe even greater inches of rainfall. 6 to 10, just a dangerous flash flooding situation for portions of South Carolina and North Carolina.
CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti is in Carolina Beach, North Carolina.
This rain is coming sideways. The deterioration of this weather happening very quickly, and we still have 20 more hours to go before this storm really makes its presence known. We're expecting gusts of up to 100 miles per hour. The storm surge, another big issue here, 4 to 7 feet, easy enough to clear some of these dunes and flood this area.
Some evacuation orders are being lifted in South Carolina, Governor Henry McMaster.
Well, there'll be limbs down, there'll be debris. Don't be surprised if there was water in your home. You might have animals, snakes, don't know what might be in there, so be very careful as you return. You may still be without power.
CBS News update, I'm Jim.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun. It's all right here.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. The Buckmaster Show contributor on the environment is Mitch Tobin. Mitch is now the director of something called the Water Desk. It's a new journalism initiative at the University of Colorado in Boulder. It focuses on Western water issues in the Colorado River Basin. An award-winning journalist, Mitch is the former environmental reporter for the Napa Valley Register, the Tucson Citizen, and the Arizona Daily Star. He's the author of Endangered, which shows why so many species are at risk of extinction. That book won a gold medal in the Independent Book Publishers Award. Mitch joins us on the Buckmaster Show live line from his home in Colorado. Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. It's great to be on the show.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to have you back. You know, we talked a couple of months ago when you were on the program about we were all rejoicing in the fact that the West got some really good snow during the winter. You know, we have translated here into a summer season, Mitch, that in my 31 years here in Tucson, I've never seen it this dry. This is kind of what people are calling the monsoon that didn't show up. Mm-hmm. It's in fact, things are so bad, there's even talk of this part of the world going back into drought designation. Your thoughts?
Yes, it's been a big disappointment in terms of the monsoon in Arizona and elsewhere in the Southwest, and really hasn't delivered the precipitation that we hoped for. And you're right that the drought conditions that we saw erased thanks to this very, very wet winter that we had are now starting to creep back. So the U.S. Drought Monitor comes out every Thursday, and today, once again, there was more areas that were added to the various categories of drought. And so it's starting to take a toll in terms of the drought conditions in the region. And, you know, the monsoon is definitely important in Arizona. It also affects other states as well. And so here in Colorado, it's been pretty dry as well. So we've seen some more drought conditions here in Colorado as well.
I was just wondering, so the monsoon here, of course, happens usually July, August, and September. Up in Colorado, you're saying, where you're, do you normally get pretty good summer rains, and they just haven't been as productive as usual? Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, we don't get the monsoon here as intensely as you do in Arizona, but we do sometimes get that subtropical moisture from the monsoon come up here and contribute to thunderstorms. And so it has been drier than normal here in the Front Range in Colorado and in parts of western Colorado as well. And so the drought that was erased in the winter, you know, last winter was centered around the Four Corners. And once again, that area is showing a lot of dry conditions. And so, you know, we were given a break in a sense by having the very wet conditions, the big snowpack. So the reservoir levels along the Colorado River came up a little bit, but that was just one winter, and it's important to separate, you know, just one season from the long-term trends. And I think it's still really concerning to water managers on the Colorado River and elsewhere that we might, you know, go back into drought. And looking over the long term, over the past couple of decades, there's just been a drying out of the region, what some people call a aridification. And so just one winter is not going to reverse that.
How about the Colorado River? That's something that you're now very much involved with there at the University of Colorado at Boulder, this journalism initiative called the Water Desk. What are you hearing about these first ever mandatory water cutbacks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so your listeners may remember in recent months there was a lot of attention towards something called the Drought Contingency Plan, which was an effort by all of the basin states to come together and spread the pain in terms of less water being available in the Colorado River and trying to avoid a shortage declaration and trying to prevent Lake Mead from continuing to sink, Lake Powell as well. And so even though we did have that good winter with the big snowpack, there were still some of the first mandatory cutbacks that went into effect. It wasn't, you know, a very big deal. It didn't have a huge impact. But even though we had that winter, it didn't forestall those cutbacks. And I think the, you know, the people who manage the Colorado River and who work on these issues are always kind of looking around the bend to see when the next drought is coming. And, you know, as I mentioned, the last 20 years or so since around 2000 have been, you know, drier than normal, and the river has had much less water in it because of that. And so I think the sort of longstanding issues, the imbalance between the demand for the Colorado River water and the supply that's available, that tension still exists. And so it's, you know, not hard to imagine that we could go into another severe drought. It seems like in recent years we've gone from a severe drought to flooding and back and forth. But in general, there's been a drying out in the Colorado River Basin, and climate change plays a big role in that. You know, as the temperatures, you get more evaporation and you get less water in the river.
And there's a lot of demand. You've got how many states that are a part of this? You've got, seven states and Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Colorado River supplies about 40 million people. And you mentioned there's seven states here in the U.S. as well as Northwest Mexico. And, you know, if you look at the economic impact of the Colorado River, people who've studied this have come up with a total of $1.4 trillion in annual economic output. So it's a humongous economic driver and really the lifeblood of the Southwest. And so many, many people dependent on it. Not only for drinking water, it also is an important source for irrigation, for agriculture. So kind of hard to overstate the importance of the Colorado River. And I think all the water managers are, you know, definitely going to be keeping their eye on the snowpack this winter to see what happens. And, you know, nobody really knows what's going to happen going forward in the next few months. But it's somewhat concerning that we seem to be slipping back into drier conditions.
Are there any previews out on how the winter might be shaping up precipitation-wise?
You know, I haven't seen anything really solid or definitive on that. You know, sometimes we look at things like El Nino versus La Nina because that tends to cause precipitation to fall more in some places and less in other places. But right now we're in what's called neutral conditions, so there isn't either of those at play. And, you know, just in general, it's pretty hard for folks to predict several months out in terms of what the winter snowpack is going to look like. I certainly wish I knew. It would be making it easier for me to figure out where I'm going to go skiing this winter, but it's really, really difficult this far out from winter to know what the conditions are going to be like.
Okay, Mitch Tobin, always a pleasure checking in with you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
Mitch Tobin, who is our environmental contributor on the Buckmaster Show. We're so delighted to have over 24, a couple of dozen contributors, including our legal contributor, attorney Don Luce, who is next on the Buckmaster Show. He's in the house. He'll be with us next on Luce, right after this.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA's Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk with me in studio, Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor. He's the author of two very popular books, both now in their second printing, which is very good news. Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers, and estate planning in Arizona, what you need to know. Estate planning went into its second printing and is now out just recently. So lots there, lots of wonderful information that is geared toward not his fellow attorneys, but geared toward the consumer. Don, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thank you.
Good to have you back with us in studio. We've talked over the last couple of sessions, Don Luce, about legalized recreational marijuana. Apparently, it's drawing closer to a public vote. I understand now they're actually have taken the first steps to putting it on the ballot.
So they have. Initiative is called Smart and Safe, Arizona Initiative. And under this initiative, it would be legal in Arizona for Arizona residents to possess marijuana in specified quantities for recreational use. If this passes, Arizona will become one of 11 other states that have recreational marijuana laws on the books. And as you and I have spoken about on past occasions, this is clearly a national trend. More and more states are either through ballot initiatives or through legislation adopting laws that make it legal for people to use recreational marijuana.
Does it answer some of the questions that we addressed with you a month ago? Some pretty obvious questions.
Absolutely. So this proposal, by the way, numbers something like 20 pages. It's pretty comprehensive, but I think that's good because once something is passed by a ballot initiative, it pretty much ties the hands of the legislature to change it, even if some of the provisions don't make sense practically or legally. But this proposal, which has been a long time in the making, is very comprehensive in terms of what it purports to do. So, for instance, under this proposal, adults, and that's 21 years or older, would be able to possess 1 ounce of marijuana with no more than 5 grams of it being marijuana concentrate. Okay. Every adult, again, 21 years or older, could have 6 plants at their home with no more than 12 plants in homes with multiple units. So you can have 1 ounce plus plants in your home, and under this proposal, that would be legal, and you can use it, of course, for recreational purposes. Now, we have about 116 marijuana dispensaries in Arizona currently. In order to obtain marijuana from one of those dispensaries, you would have to have a medical marijuana card issued by the Department of Health Services. The Department of Health Services, under this proposal, will continue to regulate the existing medical marijuana program, and it will also have regulatory authority over recreational marijuana dispensaries as well. So, is this going to generate revenue? The answer is yes.
How much?
16% more than what is currently taxed on sales. So when you go to purchase a good in Arizona, you typically pay state sales tax and you pay local sales tax. Under this recreational marijuana proposal, a 16% excise tax would be placed on top of those. So you're looking at, depending on which jurisdiction you're in, somewhere in the mid 20% in terms of tax on recreational marijuana products.
How about marijuana and driving?
Oh, that's a tough one. And the reason it's so difficult is because the Arizona Supreme Court has already ruled that the mere presence of a metabolite in a person's system, and a metabolite is a byproduct of marijuana, the mere presence of that in a person's system doesn't constitute driving under the influence or driving impaired. And a metabolite can remain in a person's system for weeks after ingestion of marijuana. There's no bright line test for what constitutes driving impaired while using marijuana. So what the officers are left with, who are responsible for enforcing these laws, are basically field sobriety tests. They observe a person's demeanor. They do test the blood for the presence of THC, but it's largely based upon their observations at the time of the traffic stop as to whether they're going to make an arrest or not. And if they make an arrest, then the conviction hinges in large part upon what they observed at the scene.
How about companies? How much power would they have over an employee who uses recreational marijuana?
Okay, so under this proposal, employers would be able to terminate employees who basically show up under the influence of marijuana. And that was a big contention in connection with putting this proposal together, because at one time there was some thought given to allowing medical marijuana users specifically to show up to work impaired. Under this recreational proposal, it's clear that if you show up to work impaired, you can get fired, and that is legal.
Mm-hmm. And there was one other area that we had touched on a month ago, and that was smoking marijuana in a public place. Is that like outside a restaurant or something like that? What does this provision say about that?
So under this proposal, it would essentially be limited to the same places that are designated for cigars and cigarettes at public places, which, as we both know, are very restricted areas. And the thought is public use of marijuana, even if it's legalized, ought to be very carefully controlled, because you don't want people who don't want to ingest marijuana to be subject to the smoke.
Secondhand smoke.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And also, people under the age of 21, under this proposal, are not legally allowed to use marijuana, even for recreational purposes. So that's a pretty important restriction, and the smoking would be limited to those areas that basically are currently set aside for that purpose.
And we would become, how many states now have recreational marijuana?
11.
11, so we'd become the 12th state.
We would.
And the trend continues to grow, right?
It does. Now, interestingly, a few of the states have adopted the legislation through their legislative bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the states have legalized it through ballot initiatives like what is being proposed in Arizona. And speaking of that, this Smart and Safe Arizona initiative has been filed with the Secretary of State. They now have to get 237,000 valid signatures on a petition by July 2nd of next year to qualify for the November ballot. The thinking is that this proposal is so well funded, both by in-state and out-of-state proponents, that they're going to be able to do that. But they need 250,000 signatures.
All right. Got about 4 minutes left. I want to talk a few. Maybe we can hit on a few of the new laws, the Arizona laws. Tuesday marked 90 days from the end of this year's legislative session. So we have 14 new laws that took effect on August 27th. You want to kind of give us the overview, Don Luce, on some of these?
Let's just talk about the fun ones.
Okay, yeah, why not?
Party houses.
This about? Yeah, what was this about? Prickly Pear Margarita. Prickly Pear Margarita is now the official state drink in Arizona.
Nope, lemonade.
Oh, okay.
Should be Prickly Pear Margarita.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
I want to talk about the Airbnb and the VRBO rentals that for years have caused neighbors to pull their hair out. So,
right.
Yeah, so you have a house, Bill. You have a very nice house in the foothills, mm-hmm. and your neighbor rents his house out for a wedding party.
Uh-huh.
You come home from dinner. And there are 23 cars blocking your driveway.
Oh.
Okay, that's not going to be permitted. House Bill 2672, which Governor Ducey signed several months ago, has now become law, became effective on the 90th day following the close of the legislative session, which was in May. And under this new law, short-term rentals for special events are banned. So no more golf outings for your fraternity brothers, no more wedding receptions, no more non-residential uses, which had been the big bone of contention. There's also the ability at the state level to further regulate these rental properties. We're going to see how this goes, but in the years to come, there may actually be additional regulations. One of the interesting things is previously local governments, cities, towns, villages could not really inquire even as to what was going on with the properties within their jurisdictions. They now have the ability to at least know what's happening. And so that's been a major change in those type of rental arrangements. There's another bill that Governor Ducey signed that became law, which I think is really interesting, and that is the professional license reciprocity. So if you're a licensed cosmetologist in Massachusetts, okay,
mm-hmm.
and you're in good standing,
right.
You can come to Arizona and you don't have to test in to get a professional license here. Your professional license will transfer to Arizona and you'll be able to engage in your profession without having to retest.
Now, that is a big deal.
It is a big deal. Now, you still have to register and you'll still have to pay a fee, but you're not going to have to test in like you used to have to do.
All right, Don, I've only got about a minute left, but we began our show today talking with Councilman Kasachek about these electronic scooters that are going to be in Tucson here in about a week. Electric scooters have popped up on city streets across Arizona and the country. There was some legislation that now has become law concerning scooters.
Yes, so scooter riders are going to have the same rights and the same obligations as bicycle riders. So bicycle riders can ride in the street. There are designated bike lanes. Scooter riders are going to be able to also ride in the street, the same as bicycle riders. I thought the councilman's point was excellent, though, in terms of how these things could present a public
problem.
Safety
and
problem.
And they have in San Diego and other places.
I've been to San Diego, and I've seen the dozens of scooters on the corner just lying on the sidewalk. So the question is, what happens if somebody gets injured? Who has liability? Is the city going to face a number of suits because of scooters on the sidewalks when people trip over them? Good question.
I think they're facing a nightmare myself.
I heard that discussion.
Don Luce, thank you very much. Don Luce of Luce Law Group, offices in Tucson and Phoenix. His two books, both in second printings, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Don, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. My pleasure.
That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Tomorrow, Congressman Raul Grijalva with us in studio, along with Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star. On behalf of Don Luce and Bob Dio, my fine engineer producer, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great day.